to go. Okay, we move to the last case. It's the United States versus Darnell Ellis. Sorry, lost your card. Go ahead and state your name.
May it please the court, my name is Brian Kinsler, and I represent the defendant, appellant Darnell Ellis. Good morning. The facts in this case are fairly simple, and I would normally avoid stating them, but I think they can be summed up in relatively few sentences. Federal agents conducted a controlled buy in Milwaukee. The unidentified person who brought the cocaine to the scene left and was followed to a residence on North 40th Street in Milwaukee.
There's agents, no evidence, is there, that unidentified person had originated his trip to the cell from that building?
None whatsoever. These are fairly bare facts, and I think they're fairly uncontested, and that's why I begin with the discussion of them. That person was unidentified at the time. The agents followed him to the address. They saw him walk into the address. They're unspecific as to which door. The record is completely unclear. This is a duplex. That's all they saw. Surveillance was broken off. 8 days later, agents conducted a knock and talk. They approached the front door where Mr. Ellis was seen, came to the door, and refused to give consent.
Does the record show how far the distance is from that front door where the knock and talk people are and, I guess, the side door where Officer Lopez is stationed?
That's not in the record.
Who was at the front door?
The defendant, Darnell Ellis, and several officers. Officer Lopez was, I believe, at the side door.
Mm-hmm.
With several other.
Officer Chu was at the front door, wasn't he?
It's my understanding that Officer Chu was back a bit from the side door, but claimed at the hearing that he could see what was going on at the front door. I thought the facts were simple.
The reason I ask that is because, at least the way I read it, is Officer Chu and the other one were present during the refusal of consent. He went through his whole thing. He doesn't live there. The owner isn't there. He doesn't have authority to give consent. Therefore, he's not going to give consent to search and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Lopez, in the meantime, is over at the side and at some point hears footsteps. And then, as I understood it, Officer Chu, who was at the front door and was least familiar with this refusal, joins Lopez at the side. The two of them barge in.
I don't believe the court's incorrect, but I can say that there were many officers present and that there was a fairly constant line of communication. The confrontation at the front door was loud enough for officers at the side door to hear that Mr. Ellis was refusing to give consent, that he said that he did not live there, and none of the residents were there. They were out, I believe he said, getting something to eat, and that they should come back and ask for consent from the rightful residents.
Yeah, that's an important question from my point of view, because what I have wondered is whether Officer Lopez, stationed at the side door, knew contemporaneously with Mr. Ellis's statement that he was saying whatever he said about no one else being there. Now, there are two different versions of what he said, one version being none of the people who live here are here, and the other version of what he said is no one is here.
That first one is the one that the court found.
Okay, so none of the people, because in the transcript of the hearing, you see both of them, both phrasings from this. This would be the testimony, I'm looking at kind of page of Agent Krueger.
I believe Agent Krueger, in a sort of broken sentence, that sentence can be interpreted both ways. However, the district court did find that no one, that Ellis had stated that no one who lived at the residence was there.
So there could be 35 other people there, except they don't happen to live there. You know, I mean.
That and the fact that it was a duplex and there was a separate residence upstairs, and I happen to live in the upstairs of a residence, and I occasionally walk down the stairs into the basement. But that's.
There was never any, as far as we can tell, any talk about obtaining a warrant for this search, was it? Obtaining a warrant for the search?
No, Your Honor.
For the entry?
In fact, the government conceded, and I think the officers conceded on the record, that they had no probable cause at the time they walked up to the residence. At the bottom line here is that if we accept the district court's calculation, if we accept the formulation of what happened, reasonable suspicion, some degree of reasonable suspicion, plus clean refusal to consent, plus the sound of footsteps, equals legitimate, warrantless entry. And I have to say, in this particular case, I would love to take the stance that under no circumstances can refusal to consent ever be considered in officers' calculation or determination that probable cause exists, or that a court can never use that. I don't want to do that because I think it's too strong a line. But in this case, I don't have to, because the facts are on our side. Here, there is no evidence that Ellis was lying. They didn't know Ellis from Adam. They didn't know who the real resident was. He came to the door and said, "I don't live here. The people who live here are somewhere else. I can't give you consent." So he neither had authority to consent, nor did they believe he had apparent authority to consent. Even if he did consent, officers would not have been permitted to enter. I'd like the court also to consider the issue of manufactured exigency. In this particular case, their confrontation was not, "Could we talk to the residents? We're concerned. We're doing a drug investigation." Here, they approached and lied, said they were doing an investigation, attempting to get into the home by saying that there was a missing child they were looking for. I think that's got all the earmarks of manufactured exigency, because aside from the fact that I don't believe anything he said should be counted as indicia of probable cause, it was also used as an exigent circumstances. And under that set of facts, I really genuinely believe that this is a manufactured exigency.
It's interesting. It's manufactured, and it's a phony reason to get in the house. It's also, if someone said, "We're here on a drug investigation," obviously, if somebody's got drugs in there, they say, "Well, no way." If it's for looking for a child, which, of course, is what the deception was supposed to be, it would be a harmless entry, and they'd, "Oh, yeah, no, there's no kids here," or something or other, or whatever they'd say, and everybody'd go away. Instead, he asserted that these are cops, and no way they're coming in, so to speak. Now, I'm not saying that's not a legitimate determination, but it would seem the lie actually lessened the threat, I guess, or the...
I have to disagree. I'm not sure that becomes part of the analysis. Here, what we're really talking about is officers had a gut feeling. Gut feelings are a wonderful thing. I operate on the basis of gut feelings. But here, the gut feeling was not augmented by any rational fact. I could have been at that door. If I was at that door, I would have said, "Hello, officer. I don't live here. I can't give you consent to enter." They didn't. It's not as if they knew there was something he was saying that was patently false, like they had identified him before they approached and determined that he was the resident and said, "I'm not the resident here." Then maybe there would be some indicia of probable cause. He didn't give some absurd reason. "I'm sorry, I'm taking care of a sick giraffe." Something absurd that didn't make any sense. Here, he said something that made perfect logical sense, and to an objectively reasonable officer, not an officer operating on gut feeling, to an objectively reasonable officer, there was nothing in his refusal to consent that provided anything that would suffice to establish probable cause. And finally, I see that my time is...
What about the Lopez hearing somebody running around in there?
I'm sorry?
But Lopez of the side hearing somebody running up and down the stairs. That's his... That's whatever they say added exigency.
I understand that they also say that added probable cause. If there's not probable cause, you don't get to the exigent circumstances. That's first. Second of all, and I'll try to close very briefly, but in addition to the, I think, category error, you can't combine the two unless probable cause already exists. There's another problem, and that is that running through a house could mean anything. Which is to say, it's probable cause of virtually anything equals probable cause of virtually nothing.
And it was a duplex.
It was a duplex. It was the side door. Any officer familiar with the architecture and the homes and the way they're built in Milwaukee will know that that's how you get to both entrances. That's how you get into the basement. Anybody running down to do their laundry. Not that it has to be an alternative, but he never said he was the only one in the house. There was nothing patently suspicious about what he said. He merely asserted consent. Bottom line here is that suspicion, fairly stale suspicion, plus refusal to consent without anything else, and the sound of footsteps means officers will never need a warrant. And that's the government's argument, and that's my best argument against the district court's ruling. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bill, I'll give you a little time to come back.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Koenig?
May it please the Court, Jonathan Koenig appears on behalf of the United States of America. Good morning. I would like to say a little bit about the totality of the circumstances standard.
Mr. Koenig, I want to start with the fact that these police officers and the district court place some weight, it seems to me, on the fact that Mr. Ellis refuses consent to allow the officers to enter the residence. They seem to think this is a fishy thing for people to do. And I have to say, for a whole variety of reasons, I think that simply can't be part of the equation. I guarantee you, if a police officer came up to my house, I would never let them in. Every six months I read reports about people impersonating police officers who come in and murder people and so on, and I would simply not do that for somebody who was a stranger standing at the door. And it's not because I'm hiding anything. It's not because of anything. It's just because life is dangerous, and people have all kinds of reasons to say no. So I think it was very troubling to me that these police officers seem to think that saying no is a component of probable cause, and I particularly also think that it's troubling that they concede that they're wrong 50% of the time, that they think they're exigent circumstances. That's not a very good batting average for this.
Your Honor, I would make 2 points in response to your concern. Mr. Kinstler referred to this as a clean refusal of consent, and I would respectfully disagree with that. According to the officers, Mr. Ellis said several things, including people who live here aren't here. I'm here alone.
Well,
and no,
I don't
and
think
no,
he said that.
In.
I mean, what the transcript, which I have in front of me, says, and no one that lived at the residence was actually there at the residence. Now, he says he doesn't live there, so he's obviously saying, he isn't saying no one's there, because there he is. And he's not saying, I'm not here. He's saying none of the people who live here. In other words, there's nobody to whom I can go and get consent for you to enter. They then maybe understand that differently, whatever, but the district court doesn't find that that he's actually just telling a falsehood. And I also have a concern about how much Officer Lopez was able to hear, because if he didn't hear the exact statement that Mr. Ellis made and all he hears is the running footsteps, then I don't see how we can patch together those two circumstances.
Well, Your Honor, taking your second concern first, it does appear from the record that what was going on at the front entrance was discernible not only to the people at the side entrance, but also the people in the rear, including Agent Krieger. So,
do they actually testify that they could hear every word that Mr. Ellis uttered?
I don't know if they said every word, Your Honor. I wouldn't want to misrepresent the record. But, yes, Krieger said that he could hear what was going on at the front.
Well, what was going on could, I mean, to me it makes a big difference because, as you know, I mean, this kind of shared knowledge of the police theory only works if they have an opportunity to share, if you will. If either Officer Lopez was able to hear independently that there was some conflict between Mr. Ellis saying something that made them think other people weren't there, and then he hears the footsteps. Now, it's still a duplex. He could have said nobody's here in this unit, and somebody from the other unit could have been running down. That would be perfectly consistent.
It would. There could be many explanations for running footsteps, Your Honor. It could be somebody who was in the shower and they wanted to get their clothes on. It could
sure,
have been a small
child.
There
could be a child who was about to do something,
that's true,
you
but
know,
the,
stick his
the
finger
court's
on
focus
the...
should be on how matters appeared to the officers.
Exactly. That is my focus. And I honestly, at the probable cause stage, I can't see what adds up to probable cause to think that there are drugs in this house. Because you agree, he couldn't. The police could not have gotten a search warrant as of the time they're walking up the steps.
I would absolutely agree. That's why they did a knock and talk. They were very candid
right.
about that.
And I don't see, all we get added is the statement, people aren't here and running footsteps in a duplex. How does that suddenly transform, forget about exigent circumstances, how does that translate into probable cause?
Your Honor, this court has cautioned against viewing bits and pieces of a probable cause showing in isolation.
Tell me the whole piece. I mean, there is nothing but bits and pieces here.
Well, but Your Honor,
there's
respectfully,
a statement
the government,
and running.
Respectfully, the government believes that they do add up to probable cause and exigent circumstances. Not only did we have the undercover transaction, which was admittedly about a week prior.
And no evidence whatsoever to think that the person who was engaged in that transaction was doing anything but going into that house to take a nap. We don't have any evidence that that's where he got his drugs from. We don't have any evidence that that's where he lived. We don't have anything, and it was 8 days earlier.
And in addition, Your Honor, there was the information that one of the occupants of the home had two prior drug convictions.
But no evidence of when, right?
Not in the record, Your Honor, no.
Well, one thing I've looked at from your brief, at least, because I was concerned about what one can hear, what Lopez could hear.
Yes, sir.
He had the full context of it. But your brief at least says, on page 6, that officers McNeil and Chu knocked, identified themselves as police officers. They were in uniform, and they were investigating a lost child. But those two were the ones who knocked.
Yes, Your Honor. And my understanding of the record, I'm sorry.
That's what your brief says. And then your brief goes on to say on page 8, that Chu then joined Lopez at the side door. Chu, who was present when he made the statement. And then the two of them broke the door down. Now, the only reason I point that out is because of what Judge Wood brought up, because it concerns me also. How does Lopez know what's going on at the front door? And they're trying to add up probable cause. And the total addition to probable cause is whatever the context of his refusal to let them enter, and the footsteps. And the only person I see totally familiar with both of those would be Chu, before they barged in.
And Chu doesn't testify.
That's correct, Judge Wood. My understanding of the record, however, is that Chu did join Lopez at the side of the duplex. And I'm not sure if I gave a record citation for that or not, but I'm fairly certain about the point.
Well, as far as joining at the side, yeah, you got transcript 69 and 88, whatever that is. But anyway, that's, I'm trying to look at it from your point of view. That seems to be all that's there.
Well, Your Honors, we would ask that you affirm the denial of the motion to suppress, viewing all of the facts and circumstances that presented themselves to the officers. And just ask yourselves, would it have been reasonable under these circumstances to sit around and wait for a warrant? You've got this statement at the front door, which I do not agree was a clean refusal. It was a disassociation of Mr. Ellis from the residence. You've got noises within the residence. Yes, they could have been many things, but in the experience of the officers, they're often indicative of evidence being destroyed. And as this court has repeatedly recognized, drugs are especially capable of being destroyed in relatively short order.
But, you know, when you look at transcript page 88, you cite 69 and 88, it really looks like Lopez makes the decision to break in before any input from Chu. The court asks a question. I do have a question because initially McNeil and Chu were at the front door. The witness, yes, sir. But then you said Chu entered with you, and that was on the side or in the back. The witness, this is obviously Lopez, correct. When I heard what I heard, I requested that he come over by me, the court. And so then Chu was the one who kicked in the door, correct. So you know, it doesn't seem as though the decision to kick in the door is made on the basis of anything but the running footsteps.
Your Honor, I have just a different understanding of the facts. First of all,
looking at the testimony here that you cited.
Well, rather than dig around for record citations, which I regret that I don't have right at my fingertips, mm-hmm. I would just reiterate what opposing counsel has already admitted, which is that the circumstances were such that the officers were in pretty much continuous communication. They could hear what was going on, not only from the side entrance, Your Honor, but from the rear of the duplex as well. I don't know if that's because windows were open or it was a warm day or why, but that is what the record reflects.
Okay.
And so, again, we would ask you to look at the totality of the circumstances and affirm the denial of the motion to suppress.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Kinsler?
I'll be brief. Thank you very much for the additional time. Again, whether officers had a gut instinct is not the question. It's whether or not there was objective reasonableness. Under this set of facts, there is an incredible scarcity of sufficient indicia of probable cause. That's first of all. Second of all, I do agree the record is thin on whether or not there was communication between the front door and the side door. I don't think they've established that there was. But even if there was, and when the government says this was not clean, there is absolutely nothing that officers knew at that time that impeached the denial of consent by Mr. Ellis. Nothing at all. They didn't know who he was. They didn't know why he was saying it. This distancing himself could be implied to anybody that approaches their own front door and says, I don't want to give consent. And finally, I think the most impeaching evidence in this case is the officer Lopez's testimony. It is a stunning colloquy between counsel and then between the court and Officer Lopez. It appears in the appellant's brief at 114. It is absolutely shocking. Repeatedly, the officer is asked, first by counsel and then by the court, but you understand there's a difference between probable cause and exigent circumstances. And repeatedly, Officer Lopez exhibits that he has no understanding. Yes, I had probable cause because there were exigent circumstances. That was his gut instinct. That was what he operates on. But that is not good enough to establish probable cause because that is not objectively reasonable.
And behind the podium.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. This case be taken under advisement. I understand you were court appointed. Is that correct?
I am, and I thank the court for the opportunity.
We appreciate the good work you've done for your counsel.
Thank you very much.
Case will be taken under advisement.